chicken fried and cold beer on a Friday night. A pair of jeans that fit just right and the radio.
Good morning. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Jimmy Patronis is our congressman for Florida, Northwest Florida District 1, and he joins us typically every Monday at about this time. Jimmy, welcome back, sir.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. So lots of big things to get to. Let's talk first about the shutdown being over. It's as many times as I've read the reports, it's still not 100% clear to me, and maybe that's my stupidity, but what has and has not been funded? Where are we really at?
So essentially, everything's been funded through the end of President Trump's term. Customs and Border Patrol will have to be funded through what's called reconciliation. The request that the Democrats are making in order to get them to work with us on funding the government, they're not reasonable. They use this as a talking point with their base in order to raise money. So that element of Homeland Security will be funded through what's called reconciliation. And we'll have that wrapped up before June 1. I think there's a deadline there too.
Okay. So everything except CBP is funded through the end of the administration. What did they get? I mean, how can they, what is the win here for the Democrats, if anything?
Well, I think what they get is we presented something less, the Senate actually presented something less Customs and Border Patrol. So, you know, so all these other elements of government that they don't have the ability to monetize for themselves in a political sense, they're okay with. But that's the one there that plays well with their base. And so they concede on all these others. There was Mark Wayne Mullen, the Homeland Security Secretary, was on TV this week. And he said that Schumer said, look, he says, we'll fund everything after the primary election's over. I've got to get past all this with my candidates. So, I mean, it becomes very political for them in order to win their primary elections for their base.
And am I right? Tell me if I'm wrong about this. I thought that Democrats wanted to zero budget ICE and Customs and Border Patrol. Like, they wanted to eliminate that budget entirely so that we could not have immigration or border protection. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean that's right now where they do not have money to operate. We funded some of it through the One Big Beautiful Bill, but you've got the support personnel of ICE and Border Patrol that are not funded, and how that was not done, I have no idea. You would think if you're funding an agency through this date, that means you're funding every element of that agency. I've still yet to get the full explanation on that.
60 days has passed. I think we're on day 64 or 65 now with the war in Iraq. Not a war in Iraq has not been declared. Iran, excuse me. What's wrong with me?
Right.
But the president is saying that the war is over because we're in a ceasefire. That seems thin to the point of nonsense to me. But the House would have to take up a war powers vote, which, I mean, I've always supported. I think if you're going to be engaged in a war, you should have it declared or not. That's why the law exists. But the Congress isn't willing to do this.
So the president made a comment the other day where, you know, he has ceased operations. And then he alluded to, you know, now the clock has been reset. So there may be an interpretation that the administration's got that if they needed to ramp back operations in a week or 2 weeks or something, then that could be the case. But the president has lost, he has lost interest in sending our negotiators to Pakistan anymore. It's a waste of time, but also you got to figure out who the heck is even in the capacity to make a decision. But the president is flying next week to China. They've actually been sent over a lot of support staff to anticipate that. I'm sure that is going to have a different type of outside influence on Iran turning the corner and having an understanding of who can actually make a decision in that regime.
All of that I understand, sympathize with, but still that, like, we're going to go 60 days on, take a week off, 60 days on, take a week. I mean, that would be perpetual warfare without a war powers declaration, right? That, like, that can't,
yeah,
be.
I mean, it's skirting around if that is the case.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have not seen a written statement out of the White House other than, but sometimes when the president makes a statement, sometimes it can be taken literally and sometimes it's
true, yeah,
figuratively so.
Congressman NES Pensacola announced, I think it was on Saturday, that we are now back to regular visitation. I assume this means people will not have to go through the front gate to the Visitor Control Center just to visit the museum, the lighthouse, and so forth. They can see Blue Angels practices, 9 to 3 access with a, you know, real ID or a passport through the West Gate. This is, man, this has been a, I mean, every time the base shuts down for some reason, it's always a big adversity, but this is good news, right?
Yeah, I'm so glad. I was scrolling through my social media this morning, and I saw where the museum has already posted their hours of operation instructions and everything. So it's such a national treasure, and it's just important to be able to allow people to enjoy it.
And such a, you know, it's a tourism generator for us. It's obviously, you know, I know the base has wanted to just, you know, when you're in a war and then you've had incursions and, you know, everybody's trying to adapt to the regulations that Big Navy puts down on, you know, everybody's trying to do the right thing. And mission is first, obviously. But, you know, here in Pensacola, we like to be mission first. But don't forget about the public access. You know, it's really important.
Well, again, there's been some flare-ups that just still people create some heightened sensitivity to, and I can respect that.
There was obviously the other sort of big news over the weekend was the collapse of Spirit Airlines. And, you know, I'm old enough where I should remember this better, but I don't remember an airline going away that was of the stature. I mean, it's not like, I mean, it's the budget airline, okay? But of a Spirit where it's been beleaguered, but where you just show up at the airport and you can't take your flights anymore. Like, there had always, it seems to me, has been transition, ownership, people take over routes, or there's early warning, so that problem of showing up and the planes just aren't running. I don't remember that happening before. And you sit on the, Transportation Infrastructure Committee in the House, right?
Yeah, I do. So, you know, we were talking a little pre-show, you know, I think probably the last one of the highest profile would have been Eastern Airlines. But, you know, Eastern has significant presence as their hub was out of Miami. And so they had a presence all throughout the United States and also in Northwest Florida. But Spirit, really similar, I mean, has a presence at PNS. You know, that flight to Fort Lauderdale, and it was a good, I've taken it before. But I tell you, where we're going to really feel it is when you lose a budget airline, it really is checks and balances for all the legacy carriers. So now you have lost that budget airline that keeps those other guys, keep their prices in check. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate. I mean, there's a lot of finger pointing going on. There was a potential merger a few years ago, which would have potentially been good with JetBlue and Spirit. But that didn't get approved by the regulators of the Biden administration.
Yeah, and of course, the Spirit has apparently claimed that a lot of this was due to the rise in price of jet fuel, which, of course, is connected to the war in Iran. So, you know, we'll see how everybody else deals with this. Like you say, when the cheap housing isn't keeping down the price of housing, well, guess what? The price of housing goes up. Well, when the cheap airlines aren't there to keep everybody else in check, you know, because they can't compete away their business, right? That's a problem. Supreme Court last week, two big developments with redistricting. Number one, in Florida, the Senate and the House passed the map that Governor DeSantis put in that's going to cut most likely outcome. It's obviously you have to actually have the election. Four House seats for the Democrats, and they're screaming. Other people are screaming about the race issue. The Supreme Court hands down the ruling that says you really can't consider race as the basis right of your districts unless you're considering it to remedy past racial injustice. They struck down the Louisiana districts. Alabama's asking for an expedited review. We have already eliminated ours here in the state of Florida. You're in Congress. This is people who you work with who are affected by this. What's your read on this situation?
Yeah, so, I mean, look, once redistricting started ramping up from state to state to state, Democratic-controlled states were going to react, as we're seeing it in Virginia, where Virginia was really a good mix of what the state's voter mix is, and now it's proposed to be a 10-1, 10 Democrats to one member of Congress, where it used to be, I think, a 6-5. So, I mean, this is going to be something that's going to be all over the country, if timing permits, with qualifying and primary elections. So some states will do it, some won't. And in the case of Florida, I do think that the governor was wanting to see what the full outcome of Virginia was, as this was something he'd already expressed he was wanting to do. But you've also got to negotiate with the legislature and want to bring them in to do this. So, the potential maps, it doesn't change Northwest Florida. It's just those Central Florida and Southeast Florida districts.
You know, what I said about this on the air was the maps in Florida particularly. I hate that it's rushed. I don't like political gerrymandering. I really find that obnoxious and wicked. I don't like anything about this. I like the principle of not focusing on race. I do like that. But I would probably vote against these maps, except that we live in a world where I look at, like, New England, you know, and Delaware and Vermont and Maine and Massachusetts, and you're telling me there's no Republicans up there at all? They have 100% blue representation.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I've lived in Illinois, and you can watch the Illinois map, and it's obvious that so many states have done redistricting in an incredibly partisan way, and you're asking me to just ignore that reality here in Florida? Like, that doesn't seem fair either.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, look, I care about what's happening in Florida, you know, so we don't get as fixated on an Illinois. Illinois is a poster child for bad behavior. So go look at the Illinois maps and look at some of those corkscrew districts they have up there in order to ensure that there's no Republican representation. So, I mean, this is just now becoming the norm as more states are going to be. You know, like some states, like in the case of Florida, there's constitutional amendments that give parameters on what a district can look like. So, you know, the Florida map has to be respect for our own state constitution on how those districts are going to be drawn.
Do you think that fair district amendment, I mean, DeSantis' interpretation is that because the Supreme Court struck down the racial component, that all of the fair districting amendment goes away and the limits against political gerrymandering have also gone away. Do you read it that way? Or do you think that, Don Gates has said he would like to, he'll vote to put that stuff back in the state constitution, at least. You know, you can't put the race stuff back in, but you can definitely put the political part back in.
Well, the fair district, I think, is reasonable. You know, you try to keep counties intact. You try to use natural boundaries. Mm-hmm. You're sensitive of municipalities, of trying to, you know, so I think that's reasonable to have an expectation that that's what your district should look like. If you look across the state of Florida, in my opinion, I think fair districts is really being observed in an appropriate way, in a constitutional way. But again, I think there's those out there that do not, they feel like it's the will of the legislature to draw the maps. Let the legislature draw the maps. If you don't like the way the legislature draws the maps, then vote your legislators out.
Yeah, and I'm with you. This to me is one more example of, I kind of wish Florida would just can everybody just do it our way? If you do it our way, run elections our way, we have results by the night, at worst the next day, you know, draw your districts fairly, and then we can eliminate some of this craziness around the country. Good.
We weren't always that way. We had to learn our lessons order to get there. So
I think 2020 was a pretty watershed moment for our state.
Amen.
Hey, last thing. I don't know if you – I just thought it was interesting. I don't know if you've been paying attention to this, but Australia, I guess, is on the verge of – taxing, like a journalism tax, 2.5%, I think, of all revenue for Meta, Google, and TikTok in order to basically redistribute money towards news organizations because TikTok, Google, and Meta use that content all the time for no compensation. And they had a law related to this, and a lot of that stuff has gone away as well. I know you're very into social media and finding, you know, ways to do it more appropriately. Does that model... I mean, is there anything about that model that appeals to you in this country for benefiting journalism?
So I've got friends that are still in the newspaper business. They own newspapers, and they are critical that they need to get a fee from the social media companies because these guys are creating the content. And it's the same thing I asked Sam Altman. I said, you get a business model that it works because you scrape the internet for information.
Yep.
You're having more and more of these recipe websites that are putting their recipes behind paywalls because people go to ChatGPT and ask, give me a great recipe for, you know, butterfly shrimp fried, you know? And so, you know, you'll get those recipes now behind a paywall. This is unfortunately one of the ways that they are going to have to do business because ChatGPT currently doesn't invent recipes, but they need them in order to keep their consumer happy.
Yeah, it's a weird scenario. On the one hand, we've all gotten used to everything being free, and we whine every time there's a paywall for a news organization, and yet we want news organizations, you know? Somehow they have to be able to generate revenue. And as you say, the particularly Google has become the most obnoxious with this, where they'll give you the AI summary that doesn't even send you to the link. You don't get the ad revenue or the click through. It's crazy.
I click the reader a lot on the top of the search engine bar.
there you go. Jimmy Petronas, he is our congressman for Florida, Northwest Florida District 1. Jimmy, as always, thank you so much for the time. I look forward to talking again next week.
Take care. Thank you.